Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 288. In the news this week over on the Masonic Roundtable, last week was pretty fun for me. I got to do a cool presentation on the Rite of Memphis. Not Memphis Mizraim, or not the Rite of Mizraim, but the Rite of Memphis. So if you have any interest in that, you might find that episode particularly enjoyable. It was a pleasure to put together that research. I've been working on it for a short time, so maybe about a year worth of information I tried to cram into a 40-minute segment. So it's helpful if you catch the YouTube video, because there are slides that help go along with the presentation. Check that out when you feel like it. If you'd like to hear some history, a little bit of some of the esoterics, the teachings, the structure, that sort of thing. Speaking of TMR, of course, we have that 300 years of Freemasonry celebration happening. It's getting closer and closer. So please head on over to themasonicroundtable.com/300 if you want to go to the biggest Masonic celebration you'll ever go to, where we're actually working and getting some stuff done. It's going to be pretty cool. Check it out, themasonicroundtable.com/300. This week, we have planned to have on a 10 for 10 guest, and we were supposed to have on Brother John Ruark. Rest assured, those are still happening. Schedules have been wild and crazy. Brother John Ruark has been super crazy, busy with work. Cable toe is pretty short right now, so that's probably going to be in April sometime. My work actually sprang some travel on me just recently, so that's going to be wild. I'm not going to be able to do everything I wanted to get done this month as far as the episodes go. Again, super busy, and I knew this was going to happen. I had talked about it a little bit in previous episodes until after May 1st, when things slow down a little bit with local masonry, and also after some work trips that I have to make. Speaking of trips, I might as well tell you a little bit about some of the upcoming dates of some of the presentations I'll be giving. Coming up April 28th, Ezekiel Bates Lodge Masonicon. That's a huge deal. Paul C. Smith, Pierce A. Vaughn, Angel Miller, Richard Cassaro, Greg Kaminsky, love that dude, Oscar Aline, myself. We're going to have an esoteric symbolism panel discussion. Brother John Ruark will be moderating. It's going to be pretty amazing. That's going to happen on April 29th, 2017, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's just one day. It's going to happen up in Attleboro, Massachusetts. So go ahead and visit EB, that's Ezekiel Bates, EB1870.org for more information. June 21st, I'll be in Columbus, Ohio. I'll be giving a presentation on Esoterics 101. It's kind of an intro topic to the extra layers of Freemasonry. Then right after that, June 23rd, 24th, of course, that is the 300 years of Freemasonry celebration. In October, I will be possibly in Missouri. I'll also be in Missouri the early part of June as well, doing a luncheon talk. And then in May of this year, I'll be giving a talk down in Springfield on comparative research. So we want to empower Masons to do proper research and give them the tools they need to present their ideas and make them as solid as possible. We don't want people to be able to poke holes in your awesome theories. We want to make you have the right tools so that you can present your data and say, this is it, definitively, prove me wrong. And hopefully it's hard to prove you wrong, right? Because we want to give you those tools to help you along the way. So I'll be giving a little bit of a talk on comparative research. And this upcoming Wednesday, I will be presenting at my local AMD chapter. So if you're a local Mason who is an Allied Masonic degree member and you're going to be in the Chicagoland area, consider coming on out to E.M. Lambert 319 meeting. If you're hearing this and you want to go to that, shoot me a message and I'll get you the info on where we're meeting. I'll be doing Freemasonry in America and a Colonial Tavern Beginnings. That's also the topic I'll be doing at Masonicon, aside from the esoteric symbolism panel discussion. So some neat places that you can go and travel and get some fellowship and we can hang out. This week I've got two articles that I wanted to read some excerpts from. Now, since grabbing a few of these issues of Fraternal Review from the Southern California Research Lodge, I have to say this magazine is pretty awesome. I really enjoy that their covers, it's not a cover story. They're putting like a 15-page magazine together. And what's nice is it's not full of advertisements. It's literally just the articles and the cool points about it and where you can get more. And that's what I really like about it. So probably one of the best, if not the best, magazine out there as far as Masonic stuff goes. Especially now that Living Stones and Working Tools are no longer in print. But this first one is from Fraternal Review, November 2016, Southern California Research Lodge. And the title of this one is Chamber of Reflection. So let's go ahead and get into it. The Chamber of Reflection in French and Scottish Rites, and some Blue Lodges, is a small room adjoining to the lodge, in which, preparatory to initiation, the candidate is enclosed for the purpose of indulging in those serious meditations for which its somber appearance and the gloomy emblems with which it is furnished are calculated to produce. It is also used in some of the advanced degrees for a similar purpose. Its employment is very appropriate, for, as Gadic well observes, quote, "It is only in solitude that we can deeply reflect upon our present or future undertakings, and blackness, darkness, or solitariness is ever a symbol of death. A man who has undertaken a thing after a mature reflection seldom turns back," end quote. That comes from Albert Mackey, the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, printed Chicago, the Masonic History Company, 1946, page 190. What I found interesting about that first initial quote is that many Masonic lodges across America don't use a chamber of reflection. But in that quote, it says, "After mature reflection seldom turns back." It makes me wonder that if we had taken it seriously enough to give them a chamber of reflection, is that an accurate statement? Would we see more men at our meetings? More Freemasonry happening in lodges? So in the back of this issue, again, these issues really have several articles throughout the one issue that really deal with that cover story, or cover idea, I should say. This one is called The Chamber of Reflection, and it is by Leon Zeldis. The Chamber of Reflection, C-H-O-R, is an integral part of the initiation ceremony in the craft degrees of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. Recently, some interest has been shown by brothers who would like to study the possibility of introducing its use in their lodges. This paper is intended to assist them by explaining in detail the nature, purpose, and operation of the Chamber of Reflection. Let me start by describing the chamber. This is a small room or cell, all in black, whether by painting walls and ceilings or using black curtains. There is a door and no windows. The sole illumination is a candlestick with one or three candles. The only furniture is a small table and one chair. On the table, there are a skull, preferably a real one, but a naturalistic reproduction can be used. A small dish containing sulfur. Another one containing salt. A sheet of paper to write the philosophical testament of a candidate. A pen. And on the chair, or hanging from a hook, a small bag. Around the walls there are some legends, such as the following: "If curiosity brought you here, go away. Only those whose heart is pure can proceed further." Vitriol, V-I-T-R-I-O-L. A drawing of a clock, and close to the skull, "I was what you are, I am what you will be." About vitriol, much has been written. This is the part of the alchemical symbolism that permeates the Scottish Rite rituals. It is the acronym of the Latin legend Visita Interior Terrae Rectificando Envies Occultum Lapidum. That is, go inside the earth, by purification you will find the hidden stone. The cock was sacred to the god Mercury, or Hermes, and Mercury together with the sulfur and salt are the three alchemical principles. The philosophical testament has a large triangle drawn on the sheet of paper, and inside there are four questions leaving few lines for each answer. What are man's duties toward God? What are man's duties toward his fellow man? What are man's duties toward himself? If your last hour had arrived, what would your last words be? At the bottom of the page, the place and the date, such as east of Baltimore, December 6, 6007, and a dotted line for a signature. The procedure is as follows. The candidate is met at the entrance of the lodge building, and he is blindfolded. The conductor, usually but not necessarily the second expert, junior deacon, then conducts the candidate to the chamber of reflection. All brethren who stand on the way must maintain absolute silence. Once inside the chamber and the closing of the door, the conductor removes the blindfold, instructs the candidate to sit down, reflect on the meaning of the legends and objects to him he finds around, and write his philosophical testament. At a later point of the ceremony, The director of ceremonies comes into the chamber of reflection brandishing a sword. He sticks the sword through the testament and takes it to the lodge. When the moment comes to take the candidate to the door of the lodge room, the conductor prepares him properly, removes all medals, including, of course, any paper money, and places them into a bag. The candidate is again blindfolded and is taken to the door of the lodge, where he strikes the door with irregular blows. This is called an alarm. The meaning of the Chamber of Reflection, the initiation ceremony in the ancient and accepted Scottish rite, is a rite of purification. The candidate is symbolically purified by the four elements, earth, air, water, and fire. The period in the Chamber of Reflection represents purification by the earth, or the alchemical terminology, the degredo. Later, in the course of the initiation, the candidate will be purified by the other elements. The Chamber of Reflection in the initiation ceremony of the ancient accepted Scottish rite has no relation with a Knight Templar degree. Leon Zeldis, FPS, The Chamber of Reflection, Philalethes, The Journal of Masonic Research and Letters, Volume Number 5. October 2007, page 99. Alright, I hope you learned a little bit about the Chamber of Reflection. If you want to learn more, I definitely urge you to check out the source material as well as the Southern California Research Lodge. Next is another article, and the theme of this issue is the two pillars. Now, I have covered the idea of the pillars in previous episodes. There is a need for me to study these. I think it will definitely be the course of some future study. I find the idea of the pillars and the mythology absolutely fascinating. The two pillars, or columns, James Stephen Curl. References to the pillars in the biblical accounts may suggest two large freestanding columns with some sort of exotic capitals standing in front of and flanking the entrance to the temple. These have their parallels in the twin obelisks that flank the entrances to ancient Egyptian temples, and it seems sundry pagan temples, the remains of which have been found in the Middle East. In the case of the Jerusalem temple, however, interpretations have varied. The pillars, which probably meant columns with some sort of ornate capitals, have been shown as freestanding uprights, or as columns in antis, that is, two columns set between flanking walls to form a part of a porch. So, in Masonic iconography, we have two columns, the three orders of the architecture associated with wisdom, strength, and beauty, and with the three craft degrees, the checkered pavement, sometimes called mosaic, and other elements that are associated with the idea of the lost temple. When we see two columns in antis associated with Masonic buildings, this would seem to be an attempt to suggest pillars as mnemonics of the temple, but they also appear in a subtle way to demonstrate, without shouting about it, a rebuilding of the temple, somewhere in which Masonic work can proceed, with each tool of the architect and stonemason acquiring moral, educational, exemplary, and mnemonic resonances. James Stephen Curl, Freemasonry and Architecture, in Handbook of Freemasonry, Henrik Bogdan and Jan A.M. Snook, Leiden, Netherlands, 2014, page 567. Now the second part of this is a short talk bulletin that was The Two Pillars by Carl Claudy. A lot of times I avoid the short talk bulletins because, number one, they're well read, and number two, they don't touch on the mysticism as much as I would hope, especially things by Carl Claudy. However, in this, he does reference several pieces of the symbolism, which leads me to believe that Carl Claudy, I probably haven't given that guy enough credit. Short Talk Bulletin, Two Pillars by Carl Claudy. Few references in Freemasonry are less understood than the two brazen pillars in the porch of King Solomon's temple. Probably a greater mass of misinformation exists regarding these than any other symbol in the craft. Early ritualists confuse the mythical pillars of stone spoken in almost all of the old charges or manuscript constitutions of the craft with the brazen pillars of the porch. The result is that modern Freemasons have composite pillars, fusing of the ancient and the mythical pillars on which were supposed to be engraved the arts and sciences of the time before the flood, and those which Hiram Abiff erected, undoubtedly with Egyptian influences and memories of Egyptian temples to guide him, before the great house of the Lord, which Solomon built. Modern masonry has hollow pillars to serve as a safe repository for the archives of masonry and to preserve them from flood and fire, in spite of the fact that sacred history says nothing of masonry or the reason for the pillars being hollow. How high were the pillars? A question which has agitated American Freemasonry largely without reason. For many years, a majority of American ritualists state that they were 35 cubits in height. A minority hold to 18. One compromises on 30. A few do not give the height at all. Many rituals set forth the fact that Hiram cast the pillars on the plains of Jordan and the clay grounds between Succoth and Zarthan, or Zeredatha. Both 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles are authority for the statement, but if there ever existed a clay ground in the location specified, it has disappeared and left no trace. Explorations, Lynch in 1847, Ridgway in 1874, not only found no clay ground, but no trace of smelters, furnaces, or other means of melting and casting brass. The quote-unquote globes, celestial and terrestrial, which usually surmount American lodge room pillars, are wholly modern inventions without basis in scriptural fact. Somewhere, at some time, some ritual maker confused the spherical form of the chapiter with the additional sphere. Desiring to account for it, he drew a map of the world on one and a map of the heavens on the other. But in the Kings and Chronicles account in Josephus are no mentions of celestial and terrestrial globes. All this is more interesting than important. The symbolical meaning of the pillars is a vital matter to Freemasons. In the eyes of critical scholarship, the ancient meaning was of the might and majesty of deity. From the dawn of religion, the pillar, monolith, or built-up, has played an important part in the worship of the unseen. From the huge boulders of Stonehenge among which the Druids are supposed to have performed their rites, through East Indian temples to the religion of ancient Egypt, scholars trace the use of pillars as an essential part of the religious worship. Indeed, in Egypt, the obelisk stood for the very presence of the sun god himself. The ancients believed the earth to be flat, and that it was supported by 2 pillars of God placed at the western entrance of the world as then known. These are now called Gibraltar on one side of the strait and Ceuta on the other. Some writers have suggested that the pillars represent the masculine and feminine elements in nature, others that they stand for authority of church and state, because on stated occasions the high priest stood before the pillar and the king before the other. Some students think that they allude to the 2 legendary pillars of Enoch, upon which tradition informs us all the wisdom of the ancient world was inscribed in order to preserve it from the inundations and conflagrations. William Preston supposed that by them Solomon had reference to the pillars of cloud and fire which guided the children of Israel out of the bondage and into the promised land. One authority says a literal translation of their names is "In thee is strength, and it shall be established," and by natural transposition may be thus expressed, "O Lord, thou art almighty, and thy power is established from everlasting to everlasting." End quote. The entered apprentice is in the process of being passed to the degree of fellowcraft, passes between the pillars. No hint is given that he should pass nearer to one than the other. No suggestion is made that either may work a greater influence than the other. He merely passes between. A deep significance is in this very omission. Masons refer to the promise of God unto David. The interested may read in chapter 7 of 2 Samuel and gather that the establishment promised by the Lord was that of a house, a family, a descent of blood from David unto his children and his children's children. The names of the pillars have many translations. Strength and establishment are but 2. Power and wisdom, or control, fit the meaning of the words as well. Used to blast stumps from fields, dynamite is an aid to the farmer. Used in war, it kills and maims. Fire cooks food and makes steam for engines. Fire also burns houses and destroys forests. But it is not the power, but the use of power, which is good or bad. The truth applies to any power, spiritual, legal, monarchical, political, or personal. Power is without either virtue or vice. The user may use it well or ill, as he pleases. Freemasonry passes the brother in the process of becoming a fellowcraft between the pillar of strength, power, and the pillar of establishment, choice, or control. He is a man now, and no minor or infant. He's grown up Masonically. Before him are spread the 2 great essentials to all success, all greatness, and all happiness. Like any other power, temporal or physical, religious or spiritual, Freemasonry can be used well or ill. Here is the lesson set for the fellowcraft. If he, like David, would have his kingdom of Masonic manhood established in strength, he must pass between the pillars with understanding that power without control is useless, and control without power futile. Each is a complement to the other. Passage between the pillars, the fellowcraft not only has his feet set upon the winding stairs, but is given, so he has eyes to see and ears to hear, secret instructions as to how he shall climb those stairs, that he may indeed reach the middle chamber. He is to climb by strength, but directed by wisdom. He is to progress by power, but guided by control. He must rise by the might that is in him, but arrive by the wisdom of his heart. So considered, the inaccuracies and misstatements of ritual regarding the pillars become relatively unimportant, whether 18 or 35 cubits high, whether they cast in one place or another, whether or not surmounted in Solomon's day with a globe of terrestrial and celestial matter little. The lesson is there, the meaning of the symbol to be read. The initiate of the old saw in the obelisk the very spirit of God he worshipped. The modern Masonic initiate may see in the two pillars the names by which he may travel a little further, a little higher towards the secret middle chamber of life, in which dwells the unseen presence. Short Talk Bulletins 1, Volume 13, Number 9, September 1935, Burtonville, Maryland, The Masonic Service Association, 2013, Brent Morris, Editor. 585-588. Well, there you have that paper. Now, the only thing I thought about this was these claims that ancient man thought the earth was flat. I don't necessarily buy that all the time, because we know that our ancient man had knowledge of the zodiacal. We know that they kept an eye on the stars. We know that they knew the return of certain star patterns in the sky or constellations. I don't buy that they thought the earth was flat for a moment, but that's, I guess, neither here nor there. But a great article nonetheless. So that's it for this week. I know it was a shorter episode. This is the way it goes sometimes. I do thank you all for listening to the program. Please make sure to hop on over to the support the show section of our website, wcypodcast.com. You can click support the show and you can either buy a pin, which is our show pin that you can't get anywhere else. It's $10 and we ship anywhere in the US for $2 and we ship international for $15. You can also do some shopping. Of course, you can go to onnit.com and support the show while supporting yourself. You can get some Alpha Brain, Hemp Force Protein, any number of great things from that website. They've been very good to us and supported us for a long time now. You also get 10% off if you use the promo code WCY. Additionally, you can make direct donations to the show via the Support the Show tab, or head on over to buybankersbest.com where you can pick up King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm or Beard Oil, which has been crafted with a recipe specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location. Black Fig and Honey. It's a really great product. A couple products, actually. Everything they make is really good. And that's it. I also would like to invite you to come on over to the Midnight Freemasons, where we publish usually 3 articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And check out the Masonic Roundtable every Tuesday, going live at 10, 9 Central. If you want to drop me a line, you can hit me up at admin@wcypodcast.com or at wcypodcast@gmail.com. So again, I invite you to hop on over to Wentz KMU's website, wcypodcast.com. And with that, we will talk to you all very soon. I believe next week, Adam Thayer may have the episode for you. So you know he's always delivering some great material. Thanks very much for listening, and until next week, stay on the level. For Wentz KMU, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Wentz KMU, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.